Welcome to another message from Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center, Kansas. For more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. It is our prayer to invest in generations to influence community.
For those of you that are visiting today, don't hold the next hour and a half against Pastor Steve, okay? I'm Pastor Steve B., the pinch hitter. Don't worry about it if you go, what is this guy? Just come back next week. He's the real guy. The video, Pastor and I talked last week about what today would look like in terms of the message, and he couldn't have chosen a better video for today. In fact, I almost feel like saying, you saw the video, you paid attention to it, I don't even need to preach. Let's go home. Oh, no, wait a minute. Hey, there's stuff down here, too. But I noticed Pastor Michael took the dinner card. He did not trust me up here. He took it away. He just thought I might stick it in my Bible and forget. See how it is? The video really hit home, and I want to show you, I don't have a video today. I want to show you a picture from about 43 years ago. If you'll throw that up on the screen. Ta-da, there we are. I remember that day very well. Like I said, that was about 43 years ago, something like that. My dad's the one at the top. Does he look kind of mean and angry? That's because he was. He was angry. He hated that day. He hated dress up. He hated spending his busy time with his dad and his only son, me. He just didn't like the day at all. But because my grandpa, that's his dad sitting next to me, but because my grandpa and grandma were visiting from Oklahoma, they had moved back to, they moved to California when I was a baby, because why wouldn't you want to be near your one and only grandchild at the moment, right? No, actually, they thought California was a place of milk and honey or something. But anyway, they went back because they found out better. They went back to Oklahoma and they were visiting. And so I made such a big deal about let's getting one of these pictures made. And my grandpa thought it was great that my dad was kind of forced into it. So he was really ticked. And I can remember the day. That's how memorable this was, because he was so upset. So he looked the part. I always thought that picture was great because he looks the part. Now, my grandpa, on the other hand, you know which one, the pasty-faced white guy, white pasty-faced doughboy-looking guy? That's me, of course. But my grandpa, he's the one that actually looks the part. He looks like an old Western character. He was born in Logan County, Oklahoma, not even in town, back in 1904, and he kind of looked the part. And you can't tell it in this picture, but what he kept doing was he kept jabbing me in the side with his elbow, trying to get me to laugh and mess up the picture. So the whole time it was, oh, Grandpa, cut it out. Grandpa, cut it out. So I remember that as much as I do. I remember my dad being kind of frustrated with the whole picture. Now, I decided to show you this picture partially because, well, it's Father's Day. And, you know, it's hard for pastors to have to deal with holidays because, first off, Christmas and Easter, what can you say that you haven't already heard? Mother's Day, you preach to moms, so dads are sitting there twiddling our thumbs, but then we kind of do that anyway. And then Father's Day, the ladies are left out. Well, you're not going to be left out today because we're talking about discipleship, so this works for everybody. But specifically, we're talking about dads. We're going to use dads as an example. And I chose this picture because these two guys formed who I am to a great degree, more than any two other people. And I want to talk about that formation because that's what God has to speak to us about today, I think. Now, my dad, I said that he was angry. he was always angry because he was running from a call of God in his life. In fact, as a teenager, he went to what we now call SAGU in Waxahachie, Texas. He went there for a year and then decided he had a better plan for his life than God did. And so he didn't follow God except one short period of time when I was 3, 4, and 5. He followed God during those times, and I'll talk about that in a minute. The rest of the time, he was running from God. He was always angry. Everybody remembers when they talk about my dad, they talk about a temper. But he was a construction guy. He had his own company. They built big buildings. He was very successful in his work and all that. I'll talk about that in a second, too. But one of my earliest memories, remember the video we saw? One of my earliest memories of my dad, in fact, possibly the earliest, was I was about 4, and we were wrestling on the floor in the living room. Now, that would have been 62 years ago. And I remember that to this day. It was one of the times my dad was serving the Lord, and when he served the Lord, his heart was right, and his heart was right toward his family. My sister's never experienced that because he left God before my second sister was born. My sister was born the second child. I remember that well. Occasionally, even during the times when he was running from God, he included me in his life, and I remember those moments now. He liked to mess with airplanes, and I remember he took me to the airport once. He always said, well, you always want to go home. You always have to go to the bathroom. You always, so I'm not taking you with me anymore. And he didn't until I was in my 20s, and he decided I could take myself to the bathroom by then. But I remember one time he took me to the airport, getting the airplane ready to go somewhere. And see, I remember that. I treasure that memory. Most of my memories are not good because, like I said, he served himself. He did not serve God. He lived to please himself. And he made it clear that I was not part of the picture, nor was my mom or my two sisters. He did his own thing. On the other hand, talking about my dad, on the other hand, I have, since the beginning of my life, scored high on, you know, those gifts tests they give you in church and at work and all that to tell you how well you do. You know, you need to do this and you need to do that. Guess what I always score lowest on? Being a pastor. I did that for 25 years. Maybe that's not why I'm doing it anymore. No, the people stuff, the counseling, that kind of stuff. You know, my idea of counseling is, here's what the Bible says, do it. Now leave me alone. So I always had a therapist on call. Here, talk to this guy. Talk to Bill. He'll take care of you. But I always scored high on teaching, administration, and leadership gifts. And I don't mean just a little bit. I mean my line goes down here and then up in those three areas and down. And that's all because of my dad. Because even though he did not have leadership seminars at dinner time, and I remember I worked for a few companies when I was in college and then young adults before I went into full-time ministry. I worked for a few companies that with carpenters that knew my dad. And they said, wow, you've really blah, 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 blah. Did your dad teach you that? Do you guys talk about this stuff? And I said, are you idiots? Do you really think we sit at home and talk about construction? Are you kidding me? No, he never said anything about that. Besides that, he never sat at the dinner table. He was too busy doing something else. But he did, in the moments that we were together, teach me things that formed who I am. And when I went in a transition from pastoral ministry to what became network leadership ministry, it was almost exclusively because of those three gifts that I got directly from my dad as he poured into me, just rubbing up against him. He trained my mind and my personality and who I am to be able to do those things well. In fact, most of you, I think, know that I worked for the Assemblies of God in Southern California. I still do on occasion, still do some consulting. But I would do a lot of pastoral leadership. So I'd have a group like this of pastors and church leaders. And quite often, one of the very first things I would teach them is something I learned from my dad. Because he always said, now in construction terms, we call them superintendents. He would always say, a superintendent's a little bit lazy. Of course, I would change it and say, my dad always said a supervisor's a little bit lazy. Pastors, you need to be a little bit lazy. Why is that? Because number one, he lets the person we hired to do the job. One of the problems with pastors is they tend to be guys that want to do it all themselves. I've got the time. I can do it better than them. I'm not going to let somebody else do it. I'll just get it done myself. That's the worst thing a pastor can do. So I'd start there, and then he would always say, and a good superintendent is always trying to find an easier way to do the job. And that's what a pastor does. When a pastor and church leadership, we're always trying to find easier ways, more effective ways to do a job. So my dad, even though he didn't serve the Lord from my age 4 until he died in 1997, he came back to the Lord right before he died. He still impacted ministry because he rubbed off on me, and then I was able to share that with those that God had called me to lead and put me in position to lead. My grandpa. He's the reason I was able to survive my dad. Because you need that man in your life that'll love you unconditionally, and my grandpa did. My grandpa was the big... He was the biggest character there ever was. He was the most fun guy. Everybody loved my grandpa. My grandpa, when they retired in 1970 and moved back to Oklahoma, he decided he was bored. So he got a job as a custodian at a high school. At his funeral, the room is bigger than this, and it was filled with kids from that high school that came to hang out with my grandpa one last time. That just, I'll never forget that. See, you know, having bumping up against each other. All of us grandsons were his pallbearers, and we had a hard time getting out of the church because all those high school kids. My grandpa was a barrel of laughs. He was great. He was fun. Now, he was not overly spiritual. He was not one that would go to the store and say, "Oh, praise God, there's the wrench that I needed." He would never do that. You'd never know just in the course of life that he even knew Jesus. I knew it. The family knew it because of what I'm going to tell you, but he just wasn't overly spiritual. He didn't even follow Jesus until my dad was 1932. My dad was dying of diphtheria. There was no money for doctors, and I don't know that doctors knew how to deal with that anyway in rural Oklahoma. But one of the greatest treasures of my life is my grandpa's younger brother was killed 2 years after the story I'm going to tell you. He killed in a construction accident. But they tell me he kept diaries of everything, that he had dozens and dozens and dozens of diaries. Only one of those diaries exists to this day, and I own it. And it's a little diary of the night, tells the night when Lawrence carried Frank to the altar. My grandpa and my dad carried Frank to the altar, and Frank was healed and Lawrence was saved. You know, that's a treasure to my life. In fact, my aunts have said, "Will you make copies of that for me? Because I'm kind of jealous that you've got it and we don't." So I've made copies for my aunts. But that's when he really met Jesus. And that's important to the story that I'm going to tell in just a second. Now, because I went to high school from my grandparents' house. My folks lived in a weird place. And so for the 3 years I was in high school, 2.5 years I was in high school there, my mom would drop me off at my grandma and grandpa's house, and then I'd walk to school from there. Well, there's about an hour and a half, and my grandpa worked what we called in those days swing shift. Anybody know what swing shift is? Yeah, it's like you go to work at 4 in the morning, four in the afternoon, and get off at midnight. So my grandpa was always there when I was there for breakfast time, and he'd get up. When I came, he'd get up, and he'd make himself breakfast. I already had breakfast, and he tried to teach me how to drink coffee. And he'd get that jelly jar. Remember when we used jelly jars for glasses, or is that only an Oklahoma thing? Okay, we had jelly jars for glasses. For all of you kids, you'd buy your jelly, because you couldn't afford glassware. So you could, certain jellies, they had nice cut glass jelly jars. And when you're done with the jelly, you wash them out, and that's your tea glass. So he'd take one of those jelly jars, and he'd try to teach me to drink coffee, and he'd put about that much coffee and about that much milk and about that much sugar in it. I still hated the taste. I just don't like the taste of coffee. I don't even like mocha ice cream. But he tried. And you know, how many of you know he taught me about when you got really hot coffee, you saucer and blow. Does anybody know what saucer and blow? I knew Bill, I knew you. Would anybody else know what saucer and blow is? You young ones don't know anything. Back in those days, they didn't drink coffee in mugs. They drank them in coffee cups with a saucer. If it's too hot, you pour it in the saucer, slosh it around a little bit, and slurp it out of the saucer. That's saucer and blow. You learned something today. Go home and try it with your iced tea today. I don't know what it'll do with iced tea, but anyway. But during those times, we just talked. And he'd tell stories. I got my storytelling from my grandpa, I suppose. He would tell stories about my dad. He'd tell about my dad when he was about five. When he was about five, he took an ice pick and drove it in the side of the tire of the car. Now, this is 1935. There's no money for tires, and you can't repair a sidewall a deal like that. You got to buy a new tire. And my grandpa would tell me about how aggravated he was at that little kid of his and how he gave him a good spanking for that and what have you. And didn't help my dad any. He was still a mess. But he would tell me about that, and my dad, then he would tell me the story. "Daddy, did you really do that?" "Well, yeah, I didn't want to go to church that day." That was his answer. "I don't want to go to church. Give us a flat tire." Of course, this is the same guy that my grandpa, this is now about 1947. My grandpa had his Ford engine rebuilt, the engine in his Ford car rebuilt, and he picked it up that day. My grandpa was gone all the time because he worked for the Santa Fe Railroad. He drove the pile drivers building bridges and stuff. And so so he had picked up the car that evening from the engine rebuilder, because we didn't buy new, or they didn't buy new cars in those days. They had them fixed. And so they had this rebuilt engine in this flathead Ford car. Well, my dad snuck in. He's about 16, 17. He snuck in that night, took the keys out of my grandpa's pocket, and took the car out. And they, if you've ever been to Guthrie, Oklahoma, the town park, there's a big tree right in the middle of the park. Well, that's the tree that was there the night when my dad wrapped that Ford around it, and the engine, that brand new engine, ended up sitting right next to where he was. He was a mess, my dad was. And my grandpa loved telling me about all the stuff my dad did wrong, and he'd laugh, and he had a unique laugh, and you just laughed because he's laughing. And he would tell about when they didn't have much money. He worked for the railroad, but they didn't pay a lot. At least he had a job. And his brother that I told you was killed, he didn't have, he worked day labor and such, and they had a really hard time. And he would talk about that, and he would talk about how God provided. And he would talk about just life in general. If there was a family gathering, you never saw Grandpa with the old people. Now, by old people, in those days, anybody over about 25 was old as far as I was concerned. You never saw him with the old people. Because here's what he'd say. All they do is sit around and talk about how bad they feel and who just died. Does that sound familiar? I've sat with my cousins a few times and said, hey, wouldn't Grandpa have a fit with us today? Because that's what we do. But he always was with the kids. Wherever we were, he was there, and he was always the middle of the party. And he would play games. He loved to play board games. And my youngest sister, Karen, she's been here a time or two, she would get so mad. He would do things to just irritate her so he could make her mad. Then he'd just start laughing at her, and that would make her even more mad. So Karen and I every once in a while talk about that. Because, as I said, he worked swing shift, he was available during the day. So he was available to be part of our adventures. Now, during the late 60s into 1970, when he moved, I was the only one with a driver's license because the rest of the cousins were in Oklahoma. So I was the only one in California. So we did a lot of stuff together. We drove around. We did funds. We got in all kinds of trouble with him and my two younger cousins. One of my favorite ones was, behind LAX, if you've ever flown out of LAX, out over the ocean, anybody ever done that? You flying out, going to Hawaii, you've flown over the ocean. Well, you float over, we're from Arkansas and Oklahoma, you being flowing over, you flew over Westchester, where we pastored, in fact. Well, one part of Westchester is in the flight line, and the airport had to buy out all those homes because of the noise when the jets came in. Well, they left the streets. They tore down the houses, but they left the streets, and they're on these big sand dunes. So it was a blast to go back there and race your car up and down the hill. So one time I was driving, my grandpa was sitting right there to begin with, and my two cousins were in the back. They were maybe 5 and 8, 7, 8. So jets are taking off. We're paralleling those jets. And that Oldsmobile had a 455. It was the fastest car our family's ever owned. And I gave it the gun going up this hill. And I don't know, have any idea how fast we were going, but I said, we're going to beat the airplanes. I was talking to my cousins, Tony and Rick, we're going to beat the airplanes. Just as we crested this hill, there was a city guy on a Cushman three-wheeler sitting right in the middle of the road. So I cranked it. The only thing I knew to do, I cranked it as hard as I could to the right. And that Oldsmobiles are big cars. We laid that thing up almost on two wheels. My grandpa was laying against me laughing for all he's worth. He was just laughing. Hit the curb so hard I bent the left wheel. I think the right wheel was light enough it could go up and over, but I bent the wheel when it hit the curb. Had to go to the junkyard, buy a new tire, put on a new wheel before my dad got home, because I didn't want to die that day. And my grandpa, when we sat down in the car, you know, when it sits down, it bounces a minute. Before it ever stopped bouncing, my grandpa turned around and told my two cousins, don't you ever tell your Uncle Frank anything about this. And until the day he died, they didn't. In fact, the one cousin's gone now, but the other one, every once in a while, we'll talk about him. I'll say, hey, did you ever tell your Uncle Frank about the Oldsmobile? And he goes, no, I never did, not until the day. In those times, my grandpa just talked. He just told me about having nothing and depending on Jesus. And those stories, And that presence just poured into who I was. At about the time of the Oldsmobile incident, I didn't know if I believed in God. I was pretty sure I didn't. Because growing up in the Pentecostal church, I knew all the crazy stuff. I could make people be, by 16, I knew how to slay you in the spirit. I knew where to put my toe behind your heel so somebody could go, yes, in the name, and you'd go over. And I knew all that stuff. I saw all the phoniness, and I didn't know if I believed in God or his church. But my grandpa would just keep telling me stories. And to a great degree, because he kept telling me stories, and because then I finally went to college and finally got connected with a pastor that would answer my questions, I began to really rebuild my faith. And it was built on the foundation of the stories that guy right there would tell me about what it's like to serve Jesus. And his model of not being flamboyant about his faith and yet being solid and committed, and everybody around him knew that he loved Jesus. For me, and for my cousins, if we'll go to the next slide, my grandpa lived out this verse in Deuteronomy. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Now, my grandpa would have liked the Message translation of this verse better. If we'll go to the next slide. And I'm just going to quote right in the dead middle. It says, get them right in the middle, the 1, 2, 3, 4th line down, right in the middle. Get them inside of you, God's commandments, and then get them inside your children. Talk about them wherever you are, sitting at home or walking on the street. Talk about them from the time you get up in the morning to when you fall into bed at night. Some people get the idea that that means you're always talking about Jesus and you're always talking about the greatest, latest theological thing. And do we know, hey, you know what? I think Jesus is coming back this year because blah, blah, blah. That's a big deal now on the internet. A lot of people are doing, well, I was alive in 1988. I remember the book, 88 Reasons Why Jesus is Going to Come Back in 88. I also have a copy, or used to have a copy of the book written by the same guy, 89 Reasons Why Jesus is Coming Back in 89. He really did write the second book. I've been raptured twice on TV because we used to sing for a prophecy evangelist. And so for his TV show, we've been raptured twice. Rapture just means the camera stops, you go off stage, the camera starts again. I guess that's how it worked because that's how it did happen for us. So we're talking about all that kind of, that's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking just about living life with Jesus. Just about living life and Jesus being part of who we are and what we do and how we approach things. My grandpa had an approach to money that was a very good, and I wish I'd followed it even better than I did, and it didn't very well. Because he understood what his role as a steward was. And he would talk to me, he wouldn't say, now Steve, let's have a stewardship seminar. He'd just say, here's what I'm doing today. Here's why Grandma and I are doing this. Well, here's why we're doing that. He would just talk and just share, just like it says up there. My dad's inability to have time for me gave me a resolution to spend time with my girls. To the best of our ability, Becky and I never missed a game, a concert, or recital. Now, I give you, we were flexible because we were pastoring the local church, and most of their growing up, we were pastoring a small church in the desert near Edwards Air Force Base, so most of those kids that were on the team with them were in our church, so it was kind of a church. So I had that going for me. But they never played, sang, did anything but what we were there. Still to this day, we go with our grandkids now. I was even the ditch day chaperone for sixth graders, or was it eighth graders, twice. Taking an eighth grader to Magic Mountain. Magic Mountain is infested with gang people. And so taking them and watching out for them. I was a band parent. Can you imagine what it's like to listen to that same off-key song over and over and over again? And you know, Johnny's going to hit it with the tuba, and he's going to get about two-thirds of that measure is going to be right, and then he's going to go, nyeh, right there. Once a month, I determined to take one or the other of my girls. So twice a month, one girl and then the other girl. We went to breakfast. And it was never very, we never went to the high-end restaurants because there was no money and we lived in the little town of Boron. Have you ever even heard of Boron? Rhymes with moron. It's where U.S. Borax is. If you've ever used borax soap and stuff, that's where it comes from. There's the mine there. But the girls still talk about that to this day, how much it meant to them to go to breakfast on those Saturday mornings, just them and dad, one at a time. Now that I'm a grandpa, I do my best to spend time with my grandkids. I try to follow the example of my grandpa, pouring Jesus into them as much as I can, one adventure at a time. I usually miss that mark as a grandpa. I'm not him, wherever he went. He went to be with Jesus, that's where he is. I'm not him. He's my goal, but I miss that mark. But I try. Keep trying to take those kids, taking them to breakfast, taking them somewhere, just one grandkid at a time. Fortunately, two of them are still too young to go. One of them's just one and the other one's two, so I'm not doing diapers. Okay, I did that. I'm not doing that. So once they get out of diapers, then they can go with grandma. I look back with many regrets and some grief over the way I performed as a dad. And I could tell you a lot of stories that just break my heart that I wasn't a good dad to my kids. But one thing I learned from my grandpa, just like that video was awesome. Just like that video, I learned from my grandpa that time together was the healing balm to all of it. That even though I disciplined too hard, even though my temper was very short, God's done a work in my heart. But both of my girls, if they were here, we're doing Father's Day tomorrow. It's just because. Sons-in-law's work schedules demand we do things like that. But if they were here today, they would tell you, I think, that, yeah, he was pretty tough, and there's some things we didn't like, but he always had time for us. In fact, one of the highest compliments I ever received, and I didn't get it directly, but my oldest daughter, Julie, I was looking on Facebook before we came here, so about 3.5 years ago maybe. You know, we've been here 3 years today. Father's Day in 2006, I just thought of that. 3 years today. You've been putting up with us for 3 years now. She put on Facebook that one thing I learned from my dad is that Jesus is always the answer. I could have died right then and felt like my life was worth something. Because I know all the mistakes. Please don't think I'm trying to paint myself as a good dad. I wasn't. But one thing I learned from my grandpa is that time with the kids brought the healing. And Julie could say, I learned from Jesus and learned from my dad that Jesus is always the answer because of time spent with her. Like every dad, I was with my dad when he died. The story is long and I won't bore you with it, other than to say that he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and lasted 30 days until he died. He was diagnosed on his 67th birthday. He lasted 30 days. And in the third or fourth day before he died, he'd come back to the Lord. He'd made things right. I've heard him pray in the Spirit, which just messes with my mind because he lived for the devil all those years, and then God saved him on that deathbed and filled him with the Spirit all over again. But he threw some clots, and the doctor said, mentally, he's gone. We're going to wait for 24 hours and then see if he goes on his own. If not, then we'll have to talk about removing life support. So I knelt down beside his left ear in that treatment room. And I whispered into his ear, I said, Daddy. Now, he was comatose. The doctor said he's brain dead. I said, Daddy, I need to tell you. We're a Southern family. It's always Daddy. Daddy, I told you I'd never lie to you. it's not good, you're not going to make it. The doctors just told us. But I need you to know that I'm not going to let anybody else preach your funeral. That I'm the one that's going to preach that service. And they're not going to hear any of the bad, they're only going to hear the good. Because you're my dad and I love you. That comatose dad laying there, a big tear formed in his eye and rolled back into his ear. And those doctors don't know what they're talking about when they talk about comatose. As a pastor, I've seen many instances of that when people were aware, even though they couldn't respond. He was gone. That was on Thursday. He was gone on Tuesday. In those last few days, he never once said anything about, man, and he was well respected. He had a good company. You know, they built big buildings. If I put pictures on here of the buildings, you'd say, I recognize that one because they're backdrops to movies a lot on TV. Not because the buildings, just because where they are, right around the airport area. He never once said, I wish we'd built a bigger building. I wish our company had more employees. I wish I'd made more money. The one regret he had in those final 30 days of his life was that, Steve, I wish I'd taken time for you. I wish I'd been there for Natalie and Karen, my sisters. I was there in my grandpa's last days. That was kind of a circus, because when our extended family, when somebody's dying, we all show up. And you got 14 grandkids, and at that time he had 5 kids, 5 spouses, and 14 grandkids. We took over that hospital in Bethany, Oklahoma. It's my job to take cousins out and get them out of the room. Let's go get a hot dog. Let's go do something. Let's get out of here. My grandpa never once talked about what he wished he had done, except us. And the only people he wanted in the room was the grandkids, because that's who he'd poured his life into. Now, you've heard all the stories. It's a cliche that especially men, when they're dying, they never say anything about their job or their money. They always think they'd spend more time with their kids. And everybody thinks that's just a story. As a pastor, I've spent a lot of hours with a lot of people in their last hours. And I can tell you, whether they were wealthy, whether they were poor, whether they were young or they old, I never once heard any man ever say, I wish I'd spent more time at work. Every one of them had said, I wish I'd spent more time with the kids. I wish I'd spent more time with my family. Every one of them. Every one of them. It's not just a cliche. I get how hard it is to spend time with your kids. Work and even stuff at church takes up so much time and so much energy. It's so hard to carve out time for the kids. But the command of God that we read in what I would call God's original seminar for dads in Deuteronomy 6, it says it's your job to let God's commands get into you and then get into them. And as I observed the Church of Jesus Christ almost all my 66 years, spending the last 20 years almost in network perspective, looking inside of churches in angles that most people sitting in the pew don't ever get to see, I can say the one thing that I see most often is dads don't spend enough time getting God into themselves. That's why men's ministry, I pointed at Ryan because I think he's in charge of the men's ministry here. That's why that stuff is so important. It is not so we can go to ball games together, although I like to do that. It is not so we can have games outside. I don't like doing those, by the way. I like watching. I don't like doing. Does this look like a doer body? You laugh. It is because, men, we need to get the word in us. And that comes from daily devotions. That comes from spending time with God. That comes from sitting at his feet in worship, in music, in study, in Bible study, in devotions, in writing your, men don't diary, we journal, in writing your journal. Girls diary, men journal. But it says further that then we pour that into our kids. The guy that trained me for district ministry, name was Fred Cottrell. stood about this high, Jewish guy, met Jesus as a boy, was one of Patton's tank commanders in World War II. So this last week has been kind of tough because I keep seeing Brother Cottrell. He's gone now, but I keep seeing him in my mind's eye. And I miss him so much because when my dad died, Brother Cottrell became my dad, spiritually speaking. And he's the one that God used to get me out of pastoral ministry into whatever it is I do today. And I think about him, and I think about how he spent time. Here's what he did. He said, Steve, you need to come with me on mission trips. So I went to Portugal with him. I went to Honduras with him. I went all over the place with him. And he didn't teach me a word, but he just spent time with me. He just spent time letting me experience life. Pouring what he knew into me. So I guess I'm talking to dads. I'm talking to surrogate dads because in today's world, surrogate dad's a very important role. And then I'm talking to grandpas. In fact, my heart for this message is even more for grandpas than it is for dads and surrogate dads. Because I realize in this day of broken and blended families, seniors working longer than ever, because retirement isn't sufficient and our own bodies betraying us and making it difficult for us to do things. But that does not lessen the incredible necessity to spend time with our grandkids. Guys, Sunday school and children's church was never meant to train your kids to follow Jesus. Sunday school was begun as an outreach to poor children. It was never intended to minister to the children of church families, ever. And it has failed crashingly when families have abrogated their responsibility to disciple their children to do what Deuteronomy 6 says and tried to let the church do the training. And in today's broken families, when you don't know if you're dealing with dad, stepdad, boyfriend, you know, grandpas, it is our responsibility to pour Jesus into those grandkids every chance we get. And I don't mean preaching at them. I mean doing what my grandpa did. Rolling over cars with them, for pity's sake. Trying to teach them how to drink coffee. Blech. Doing all those fun things that just mean we're spending time together. Just like that video. I'm not talking about turning your grandkids into your buddies. Those are kids. You're an adult. Get your own friends that are your age. I'm talking about pouring into your grandkids. I'm talking about loving them like you've been loved. First, to do that, write the commandments of God on your own heart. That means devotions. That means your own relationship with Jesus. And it doesn't have to look like anyone else's. Remember, my grandpa, I told you, he was not demonstrative. He did not look like what we would expect a church guy to look like. He didn't do anything wrong particularly. He just didn't have Jesus necklaces. Then Deuteronomy says to get those commands inside of you and inside of your children in a very specific methodology. Talk about them, it says, wherever you are. Sitting at home, walking along the streets. Three of my grandkids live in Towanda. 254 is about a 25-minute, depending on how fast I'm driving, 20 or 30-minute time, that it's an awesome time to just say, hey, Pookie, what's going on in your life? I have nicknames for all my grandkids. Little one, and I tease her, because last year she turned 7, so I told her she's 77. This year it's 88. So what's it like to be 88? Grandpa, I'm 8. Oh, well, what's it like to be an 8-year-old? And we just start talking. You do that by telling your stories and being involved in theirs. Dads and grandpas in our society, your roles are so downplayed. It's even said that you're irrelevant and useless to the nurture of children, and that is a lie of the devil. As my favorite Bible teacher says, it's a lie of the devil and it smells like smoke. You have an essential role in forming your kids, one story at a time. Perhaps the greatest act of evangelism and discipleship you will ever do is pouring your lives into your kids and grandkids. And that's where the title comes from. That's when it becomes time well spent. And some of you have kind of said, well, I'm not a dad, I'm not a grandpa, this doesn't apply to me. Yeah, we're all called to make disciples for Jesus. Discipleship classes don't do very much. They don't. Seminars on discipleship don't do a whole lot. The best discipling I've ever received and the best discipling I've ever given has been one-on-one, telling our stories, talking about Jesus. So maybe you're not a dad. Maybe you're not a grandpa. Maybe you're a grandma. Maybe you're just a believer in Jesus that says, you know I have an obligation to make disciples. How do I do that? Just like I've been saying. The most effective way of discipling people is one-on-one, telling your story. Because if you go to the book of Revelation, it says that the believers that are in the book overcame by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, telling their story, one story at a time. That's my encouragement for you, I believe, came from the Spirit today. Father, I pray that you bless this congregation. First off, I pray for Pastor Steve and for Robin and for their kids, that they have an awesome, incredible time together this weekend. They give them safe journeys coming home, and I pray for this church family that each dad here would just be so blessed, would just feel so close to your Spirit that, Lord, it would just overflow, and that each one of us in the next few days would get a chance to be with a child or a grandchild and just pour a little bit of you into them. Lord, we ask you to be with us in your name. And for your glory in our lives, we pray. Amen.
Everybody dance. Everybody.
This concludes today's message. We hope you can join us next Sunday for services beginning at 10:30 at Life Point Church, located at 400 South Abilene in Valley Center. To get more information on Life Point Church, go to our website at lpcag.org. And we hope you can join us next Sunday with Pastor Steve Raines.